Okay, for today's readings, as mentioned yesterday, I thought what I would do is kind of go back and give a little bit more of an overview of the Satipatthana Sutta as a whole and how the seven factors kind of fit into that. There's several places where in these suttas where it'll say mindfulness of the breathing will fulfill the four foundations of mindfulness, and the four foundations of mindfulness when developed will fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment. So I'm going to do one reading of parts of the Anapana Sati Sutta, mindfulness of breathing, and then one sutta from the Sanyutta Nikaya that sort of go through this, that sort of analysis or looking at the seven factors. And so I thought I would start off first with the, I was looking for a couple of readings, just to sort of more commentarial of sort of how the seven factors sort of fit into the Satipatthana, or just sort of just how the Satipatthana, works. And I liked what, actually I found several I really liked, so it's kind of hard to sort of narrow it down to just one or two readings, but I'll just read something really quickly from Bhikkhubodhi in his In the Buddha's Words, the anthology of discourses in the Pali Canon. And say, the discourse generally considered to offer the most comprehensive instructions on meditation practice is the Satipatthana Sutta. The Satipatthana Sutta does not recommend a single meditation subject or even a single method of meditation. Its purpose, rather, is to explain how to establish the modes of contemplation needed to arrive at realizing Nibbana. So that was a very short sort of explanation. And then Ajahn Jeff in Wings to Awakening writes this. This is in his section on the four frames of reference. The four frames of reference, Satipatthana, are a set of teachings that show where a meditator should focus attention and how. This dual role of where and the how is reflected in the fact that the term Satipatthana can be explained etymologically in two ways. On the one hand, it can be regarded as a compound of sati, mindfulness or reference or the ability to keep something in mind, and patana, foundation, condition, source, thus referring to the object kept in mind as a frame of reference for giving context to one experience. Alternatively, Satipatthana can be seen as a compound of sati and upatana, and upatana would be establishing near or setting near, thus referring to the approach, the how, of keeping something closely in mind, of establishing and maintaining a solid frame of reference. Scholars are divided as to which interpretation is right, but for all practical purposes, they both are. The Buddha was more of a poet than a strict etymologist, and he may have deliberately chosen the ambiguous term that would have fruitful meanings on more than one level. Then I'm going to skip a little bit, and he goes on later. The proper objects that act as frames of reference are four: the body in and of itself, feelings in and of themselves, the mind in and of itself, and mental qualities in and of themselves. The in and of itself here is important. To take the body as a frame of reference in this way, for instance, means that one views it not in terms of its function in the world, for then the world would be the frame of reference, but simply on its own terms, as it is directly experienced. In other words, it is not concerned with the relative worth or utility in terms of value of the world, its beauty, strength, agility, etc., but simply how it appears when regarded in and of itself. The four objects that act as frames of reference fall into two classes. The first class, the body, feelings, and the mind, so the first three, act act as the given object of meditation practice. What experience presents on its own as an object for meditation? The meditation takes any one of these objects as a frame of reference, so the body, feeling, or mind, relating all of experiences to his or her chosen frame. For example, although one will experience feelings and mind states in the course of taking the body as a frame of reference, one tries to relate them to the experience of the body as the primary frame. A feeling is viewed as it affects the body or the body affects it. The same holds for the mind state. An analogy of this practice is holding the object in one's hand. When other objects come into contact with the hand, one is aware that they are making contact, but one does not let go of the object in one's hand in order to grasp after them. Then the second class of objects, mental qualities, the Dhamma, denotes the qualities of mind that are developed and abandoned as one masters the meditation. And so this seven factors of enlightenment and all the subjects that we've been looking at, the five hindrances, the five aggregates, and the six sense bases, these are all the qualities of mind that are developed and abandoned as one masters the meditation. Then I have one short reading here from The Mind Like Fire Unbound. And so this is kind of an introduction to, I'm going to be reading parts of the Anapanasati Sutta, Mindfulness of Breathing. And I really like the way Ajahn Jeff sort of introduces this, giving I sometimes find sort of all the repetition kind of hard to follow when I'm listening to it. And this gives a really good, it gives a great just sort of introduction into all the different modes that the sutta sort of gets into. And so I'll read this to you, and then as I'm reading the sutta, then you can kind of pay attention to these, what Ajahn Jeff says here. In this the mind like fire unbound, he's here talking about the jhana practices, but this is actually about the sutta I'm going to read, this section. So it says, a number of objects can serve as the basis for jhana. The breath is one, and the analysis of the canon's description of the first stages of breath meditation will give an idea of what jhana involves. The first step is simply being mindful of the breath in the present. There is the case where a monk who, having gone to the forest, to the shade of a tree, or to an empty building, sits down, folding his legs crosswise, holding his body erect, and keeping mindfulness to the fore, always mindful. He breathes in, mindful he breathes out. So then Ajahn Jeff says, then comes evaluation. He begins to discern variations in the breath. Breathing in long, he discerns, or it's in the Bodhi's translation, he understands. I breathe in long, he breathes out, I understand. I am breathing out long, or he breathes in short, he understands, I am breathing in short. So the remaining steps are willed or determined. Then he trains himself first by manipulating his sense of conscious awareness, making it sensitive to the body as a whole. So then the phrasing will be, he trains himself, I will breathe in sensitive to the entire body. I will breathe out sensitive to the entire body. Now that he is aware of the body as a whole, he can begin to manipulate the physical sensations of which he is aware, calming them, calming the breath, so as to create a sense of rapture and ease. He trains himself, I will breathe in, calming the body fabrications. Now that bodily processes are stilled, mental processes become apparent as they occur. These too are calmed, leaving, as we will see below, a radiant awareness of the mind itself. Then he trains himself, I will breathe in sensitive to mental fabrications, I will breathe out. And again, as just sort of showing how the, say, Satipatthana Sutta, say, mindfulness of breathing. So one reason I'm sort of going back and reading this is that it, you know, in the Satipatthana Sutta, it's like it, the whole thing is about developing mindfulness, and this is the in the Thai forest tradition, mindfulness of breathing and mindfulness of the body are the sort of primary ways of developing mindfulness. And in the Satipatthana, it doesn't really get into say the details of how to develop the mindfulness. So I think that's kind of implied that you would have been practicing developing it up through the Anapanasati Sutta. And it's interesting here that yesterday the phrase that Pantiji was referring to, the where the mind is like completely focused in on the and the breathing, that comes up in this sutta, and it doesn't actually appear in the Satipatthana Sutta. So, bhikkhus, when mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, it is of great fruit and great benefit. When mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, it fulfills the four foundations of mindfulness. When the four foundations of mindfulness are developed and cultivated, they fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment. When the seven enlightenment factors are developed and cultivated, they fulfill true knowledge and deliverance. And how, bhikkhus, is mindfulness of breathing developed and cultivated, so that it is of great fruit and great benefit? Here a bhikkhu, gone to the forest, or to the root of a tree, or to an empty hut, sits down, having folded his legs crosswise, set his body erect, and established mindfulness in front of him. Ever mindful he breathes in, mindful he breathes out. Breathing in long, he understands, I breathe in long. Breathing out long, he understands, I breathe out long. Breathing in short, he understands, I breathe in short. Or breathing out short, he understands, I breathe out short. He trains thus, I will breathe in experiencing the whole body of breath. He trains thus, I shall breathe out experiencing the whole body of breath. He trains, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the body formations. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the body formations. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing rapture. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing rapture. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing pleasure. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing pleasure. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the mental formations. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the mental formations. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, tranquilizing the mental formations. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, tranquilizing the mental formations. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, experiencing the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, experiencing the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, gladdening the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, gladdening the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, concentrating the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, concentrating the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, liberating the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, liberating the mind. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, contemplating impermanence. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating impermanence. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, contemplating fading away. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating fading away. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, contemplating cessation. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating cessation. He trains thus, I shall breathe in, contemplating relinquishment. He trains thus, I shall breathe out, contemplating relinquishment. Bhikkhus, that is how mindfulness of breathing is developed and cultivated, so that it is of great fruit and great benefit. Then the sutta goes into the fulfillment of the four foundations of mindfulness. And I'm going to go on to read the fulfillment of the enlightenment factors. In how, bhikkhus, do the four foundations of mindfulness, developed and cultivated, fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment? Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu abides contemplating the body as a body, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief for the world, on that occasion, unremitting mindfulness is established in him. On whatever occasion unremitting mindfulness is established in a bhikkhu, on that occasion the mindfulness enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. Abiding thus mindful, he investigates and examines that state with wisdom, and embarks upon a full inquiry into it. On whatever occasion, abiding thus mindful, a bhikkhu investigates and examines that state with wisdom and embarks upon a full inquiry into it, on that occasion the investigation of states enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment. In one who investigates and examines that state with wisdom and embarks upon a full inquiry into it, tireless energy is aroused. On whatever occasion tireless energy is aroused in a bhikkhu who investigates and examines that state with wisdom and embarks upon a full inquiry into it, on that occasion the energy enlightenment factor is aroused in him and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment. So then the same goes through with energy, with rapture, with tranquility, and then with equanimity. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu abides contemplating feelings as feelings, ardent, fully aware, mindful, having put away covetousness and grief from the world, the equanimity enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind as mind, ardent, fully aware, and mindful, having put away covetousness and grief from the world, the equanimity factor of enlightenment is aroused in him. Bhikkhus, on whatever occasion a bhikkhu abides contemplating mind objects as mind objects, the equanimity enlightenment factor is aroused in him, and he develops it, and by development it comes to fulfillment in him. Bhikkhus, that is how the four foundations of mindfulness developed and cultivated fulfill the seven enlightenment factors. And how, bhikkhus, do the seven enlightenment factors developed and cultivated fulfill true knowledge and deliverance? Here, bhikkhus, a bhikkhu develops the mindfulness enlightenment factor, which is supported by seclusion, dispassion, cessation, and ripens and relinquishments. And then he develops the other seven factors. Bhikkhus, that is how the seven enlightenment factors developed and cultivated fulfill true knowledge and deliverance. This is what the Blessed One said. The bhikkhus were satisfied and delighted in the Blessed One's words. Any questions on that?
What factor was fulfilled by contemplating mind objects? All I heard was the enlightenment factor is fulfilled. Which one?
All of them. All seven. So instead of reading all seven.
Feeling, it was specifically equanimity, and for body, it was specifically mindfulness, but then for mind, it was just like all of them.
I was skipping the sort of for each four, it's all seven are developed.
Yeah.
One thing I found interesting in this was that, say earlier in there, he's talking about the four factors. He's talking about contemplates impermanence, contemplates fading away, cessation, and relinquishment, and then every place in the Sanyutta where it shows up, it's seclusion, dispassion, cessation, and release. But Ajahn Pasana was pointing out that it's actually a different terminology. In the Sanyutta, it's always viveka, viraga, nirodha, and vosaka. But in the sutta here, the impermanence, is it in Anapanasati sutta? Yeah. Is it Anicca? So it's Anicca, Raga, Nirodha, and then Patinisaka instead of Bosagan, which are, you said, very closely related, but... Okay, so then in the Sanyutta Nikaya, for the rest of the class, whenever I refer to the Sanyutta Nikaya, I'll be referring to chapter 46, and unless I make another, unless I say otherwise. And this is a Sanyutta 46.6, Kundalia. On one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Saketa, in the deer park at the Anjana Grove. Then the wanderer, Kundalia, approached the Blessed One and exchanged greetings with him. When they had concluded their greetings in cordial talk, he sat down to one side and said to the Blessed One, "Master Gotama, I am one who stays around monastic parks and frequents assemblies. After the meal, when I have finished my breakfast, it is my custom to roam and wander from park to park, from garden to garden. There I see some ascetics and Brahmins engaged in the discussion of the benefits of rescuing their own thesis in debate and condemning the thesis of others. But what is the benefit that Master Gotama lives for?" Kundalia, "The Tathagata lives for the benefit and fruit of true knowledge and liberation. Master Gotama, what things, when developed and cultivated, fulfill true knowledge and liberation? The seven factors of enlightenment, Kundalia, when developed and cultivated, fulfill true knowledge and liberation. But Master Gotama, what things, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment? The four establishments of mindfulness, Kundalia, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment. But Master Gotama, what things, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the four establishments of mindfulness? The three kinds of good conduct, Kundalia, when developed and cultivated, fulfill the four foundations of mindfulness. But Master Gotama, what things, when cultivated and developed, fulfill the three kinds of good conduct? Restraint of the senses, Kundalia, one develops and cultivates, fulfills the three kinds of good conduct. And how, Kundalia, is restraint of the sense faculties developed and cultivated, so that will fulfill the three kinds of good conduct? Here, Kundalia, having seen an agreeable form with the eye, a bhikkhu does not long for it, or become excited by it, or generate lust for it. His body is steady and his mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated. Having seen a disagreeable form with the eye, he is not dismayed by it, not daunted, not dejected, without ill will. His body is steady and mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated. Further, Kundalia, having heard an agreeable sound with the ear, having smelt an agreeable odor with the nose, having savored an agreeable taste with the tongue, having felt an agreeable tactile object with the body, having cognized an agreeable mental phenomena with the mind, a bhikkhu does not long for it, or become excited by it, or generate lust for it. But having cognized a disagreeable mental phenomena with the mind, he is not dismayed by it, not daunted, not dejected, without ill will. His body is steady and his mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated. When Kundalia, after he has seen a form with the eye, a bhikkhu's body is steady and his mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated, in regards to both agreeable and disagreeable forms, and after he has heard a sound with the ear, smelt an odor with the nose, savored a taste with the tongue, felt a tactile object with the body, cognized a mental phenomena with the mind, a bhikkhu's body is steady and his mind is steady, inwardly well composed and well liberated in regards to both agreeable and disagreeable mental phenomena. Then his restraint of the sense faculties has been developed and cultivated in such a way that it fulfills the three kinds of good conduct. And how, Kundalia, are the three kinds of good conduct developed and cultivated so that they fulfill the four establishments of mindfulness? Here, Kundalia, having abandoned bodily misconduct, a bhikkhu develops good bodily conduct. Having abandoned verbal misconduct, he develops good verbal conduct. Having abandoned mental misconduct, he develops good mental conduct. It is in this way that the three kinds of good conduct are established, are developed and cultivated so that they fulfill the four establishments of mindfulness. In how, Kundalia, are the four foundations of mindfulness developed and cultivated so that they fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment? Here, Kundalia, a bhikkhu dwells contemplating the body and the body, ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful. Having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world, he dwells contemplating feeling and feeling, mind and mind, phenomena and phenomena. Ardent, clearly comprehending, and mindful. Having removed covetousness and displeasure in regard to the world, it is in this way that the four establishments of mindfulness are developed and cultivated so that they fulfill the seven factors of enlightenment. And how, Kundalia, are the seven factors of enlightenment developed and cultivated so that they fulfill true knowledge and liberation? Here, Kundalia, a bhikkhu develops the enlightenment factor of mindfulness, which is based upon seclusion, dispassion, cessation, maturing and release. And then he develops all of the other factors. He develops the enlightenment factor of enlightenment, which is based upon seclusion, dispassion, and cessation, maturing and release. It is in this way that the seven factors of enlightenment are developed and cultivated so that they fulfill true knowledge and liberation. When this was said, the wanderer Kundalia said to the Blessed One, magnificent Master Gotama, the Dhamma has been made clear in many ways by Master Gotama, as though he were turning upside what had been turned upside down, revealing what was hidden, showing the way for one who was lost, or holding up a lamp in the dark for one who's for those with eyesight to see. I go to refuge to Master Gotama and to the Dhamma and to the Bhikkhu Sangha. From today, let Master Gotama remember me as a lay follower who has gone for refuge for life. Pretty straightforward, but any questions?
I had a question about what mind well liberated meant.
That is there's a footnote in that that is actually just liberation from the five hindrances. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Didn't mean full liberation. And that was the same in the Anapanasati Sutta.
He has also raised normative, I think, many people is to not look at agreeable or disagreeable forms, but that description really drives home that that's the first step in developing equanimity.
Okay.